This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. And I am so thrilled to welcome back to Joy on Paper one of my absolutely favorite authors and one who makes me very, very nervous. Hi, Don.
This is Clary Goldsmith.
No, I'm sorry. Wait, Don Bentley's supposed to be on first.
Oh, okay. They told me to call at 10:05.
No, 11:35. Oh, boy. Hold on.
Okay.
I'll talk to you until... Don Bentley's supposed to be calling in, and I wasn't prepared for you, but I'm happy. I know that you're going to be on the program, and for some reason, Don Bentley's not calling in yet. So, well, I guess I will talk to you. I'm happy to welcome you to Joy on Paper, and I'm waiting to see what happens with Don Bentley because, he's supposed to be calling in. I'm sorry about this. This is sort of threw me a little bit, and that happens sometimes in live radio, and we get into a situation, and I don't know what is happening, but we will talk to you and and see what I can do about this. I'm just stopping a minute to send a text to the his agent. I'm shocked that he's not on, but let's talk about your book, Beshert.
Good. How are you this morning?
Okay, fine. Well, you know, as I was saying, I was, you know, when you gear up for something and you're ready to talk to somebody at 11:30, at actually 11:35, I hope he didn't get it wrong. I don't know. It's where are you that you're at? We're thinking 10:35.
Chicago.
Okay. As I said, I'm just trying to text his agent and find out what happened to Don Bentley because I did plan to talk to him, and so I just don't want to get him all confused either.
Okay.
I don't know if you've ever read any of his books. He's a fantastic author, and he's written a new book that I love, and it's called Forgotten. Anyway, I will talk to you.
So what can I do?
And you're Larry Goldsmith, and your book is Beshert, which is a Hebrew word, and we'll explain that in a minute. But one of the things that I wanted to say that it's a particularly important word to me. I've used it all my life, and things are beshert. So I don't know if this was meant to be that you called in early, because he didn't, and that's unusual for them, for his agent, and for everybody, for him not to call in on time, because he's been a guest here on Joy on Paper and many times, and I don't know that this happens, but if he calls in, I'll just put him down at the 11:35 slot, because his new book is called Forgotten War, and it is about Afghanistan and what happened in Afghanistan. It's hard to believe that it's almost 2 years ago, and it's a fascinating book, a wonderful book. But, you know, with you, your book is also, in many ways, also very timely, because, you know, the world doesn't change very much, does it?
No, it doesn't. You know, in my novel, we have a conflict with issues with Russia, And here today we have issues with Russia and human rights.
It's so sometimes overwhelming to think about it. First of all, that there's another war in Europe. How can there be another war in Europe? It doesn't make sense when you think about it. And we had, at one point, as a matter of fact, I was really happy that Russia was not on the main burner. I was so tired of books about Russia, you know, over and over. And then we landed up with books about other countries, but always in the background, Russia, Russia, Russia. And it doesn't change.
And the Sherrod is a story that starts in the late 1960s. You know, there's the Vietnam War protests in the streets. There's the sexual revolution in the air. And here, my main character, Michael, 27-year-old criminal attorney, falls in love with a Hasidic world-famous rabbi. The chances of that are one in a million. And then it goes to a courtroom battle where Michael is trying to save his rabbi father-in-law from going to jail for the rest of his life.
Oh, you know, I just had a little sound here in my ear, so I just want to make sure. Would you just hold on for a moment? I'm just talking to Big Ed in the control room. Big Ed, I think you have a backup number for in the email, so if you could check that. Okay. Anyway, I'm sorry I interrupted you. Larry, I want to start again here a little bit with you, because as I said, Bashert is what I found fascinating. Of course, it starts off right in a very important time in America, a time that people will remember, so they can relate to it. Of course, that's Woodstock. And then it follows from there, your character, your main character, David, who, as you said, falls in love and has a unique relationship, let's say, with a girl from a religious family. From your point of view, I thought that was a great starting point.
Thank you.
So when you started writing about it, this story, from your point of view, you're as a lawyer, as a person interested in the conflicts of between Russia, America, and of course everything to do with Israel. How did the story idea come to you?
Okay, so I was listening to, it started off where I was listening to one of the songs on the radio for back from the Woodstock era. And I thought to myself, how many children were probably born during, of the people who attended the concert? And then I started thinking about what went on in that time and period. You know, the Vietnam War, the sexual revolution. And then I remember that it was a time when all the people in Russia wanted religious freedom, and the government wasn't allowing it. And there was protests in the streets here in America to try to get those people out. And the Nixon administration was trying to oblige the Russian government into putting down the protests and allowing them to have free trade without tariffs. And a famous guy named Scoop Jackson, who you might remember, was in these protests. And I just developed a love story, a romantic love story, where Michael marries this religious girl and then has to fight a corrupt prosecutor working for the Nixon administration in order to save his father-in-law's life. And depending upon what happens, millions of people in the Soviet Union will either get out of their country or be allowed out of their country or not.
You know, for people at the time, it was so crazy when you think about it. All of the Jews who were in Russia and just being held there, and we had to go through The insanity of getting them out, sometimes one by one. And I still, looking back at it, I remember, you know, I remember in shul, I remember everybody's talking about getting them out, and it took so long. It took so long. I still can't believe that it took so long.
Well, we had to force the Soviet Union to give them exit visas. For instance, one of the characters in my story is a true person. One of my friends, his uncle was a Soviet general, and he was thrown into jail for months at a time because he wanted religious freedom and to go and to get out. Eventually, he was allowed out, but he had to divorce his wife, and he was told he would never be allowed to see his children again. Others were beaten. They lost their jobs. They had no way of supporting their families, all because they wanted religious freedom. And I tried to bring that out in the book.
Well, you do. And then, of course, there's a trial. And there's explain for my listeners who don't understand, really, what people had to go through and what... When I think of it today, but even today, I mean, there are people in Russia who can't get out. The whole thing is, sometimes you feel like the world is just upside down.
So the Soviet Union at that time did not want to allow people who had any type of knowledge to leave their country for religious freedom, and they didn't allow them to have religious freedom in their own country. So if you wanted to go and pray, you were you could lose your job, you could lose your apartment. If you were in school, they could expel you from the school. You could lose everything that you held precious in the world. And in times, they even had thugs who would go around to beat up these people, get them in line so that they wouldn't be religious. And a lot of these individuals stood up to the thugs. They sacrificed everything they had in the world because they wanted to get out of the Soviet Union.
And when you were, you know, as you said, you knew of people who went through this. For me also, because I lived in Israel for a while, I remember when the Jews from the Soviet Union started coming in, it was just so amazing that it happened finally.
Oh, yeah. And they had nowhere else to go. If it wasn't for the Jewish community around the world providing money, they would have been destitute refugees without a place or a home to go to.
Well, I spent a lot of my youth, I think, going around with a pushke, collecting money to get people out of Russia.
And what I tried to do was, I tried to do it as a compelling courtroom battle where the witnesses would come on and testify as to what happened to them. And I tried to bring real life issues and real life feeling into the courtroom based on being an expert witness at trials and corrupt attorneys that I have met with or been in courtrooms against. And I try to give everyone a good feeling of what it's really like in a courtroom battle.
Well, you definitely do that. The courtroom scenes are great. As a matter of fact, and I like the opening of the book. I want to go back to that in a minute because, you know, as I said, you know, your main character, Michael, is a complex character in many ways because he's going to Woodstock and he's older than most of the kids there, I think. But I thought it was an interesting opening. I think it really set the tone of what was going to happen in the story later on. And explain the word beshert to my listeners.
Okay, shirt has two meanings, and I think I try to use both of them for this novel. One is it means your soulmate, the person God wanted you to be with for the rest of your life. The other meaning is fate, and something happens because it's meant to be. So Michael meets Shira, and it's fate that they become soulmates, because later Michael's needed to save her father's life.
That's, you know, one of the things with me and Joy on Paper, I consider authors so often a golden thread in my life, because something does connect me to them. And in this case, the word Beshert is a word that has always meant so much to me. And it really, in both senses, with my husband and with the idea that things are sometimes meant to be. And so it's sort of like you were meant to call at the wrong time because Don Bentley didn't call. Again, I want to thank you so much. You know, I'm sorry that I got a little frazzled here. I don't normally get frazzled, but psychologically, I was actually starting to cry because of Don Bentley's book. It's a action-packed novel, but the subject is so heart-wrenching that I had tears in my eyes already, and so it took me a few minutes to get into telling you how much I enjoyed Beshert. I think it's a fine book. You know, Michael's a complex character. I want to tell people that sometimes you don't, you know, as you say, it was meant to be that he would eventually be there for a very important case in his life and in the life of really the Jewish people. And I think you did a terrific job with the book.
Thank you. If anyone's interested in buying a copy, they could go to LarryGoldsmithAuthor.com.
Okay. Well, Larry, thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper today.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I really think that there's a lot to be learned from this book, and I love when a book puts things into historical context, and certainly you have done that with this story about getting Jewish people out of the Soviet Union. It's hard to believe, and today we're trying still to rescue Jewish people from other countries. So thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper today, Larry Goldsmith.
Thank you, Beth.
And as you said, people can go to your website and find your book, and it's online, and it's a fine book, Larry.
Thank you, Beth. Be well.
Okay, you too.
Thank you.
Bye-bye now. Bye. Okay. Whoa. What a he's a nice guy. And it's funny, the opening is in Woodstock, and brings back a lot of memories for people who were there. And I'm sure that anybody who was there in the late 60s and experienced some of the things that his main character, Michael, goes through, will find it fascinating. I'm going to play a book buzz now, a very special book buzz from that Bria Burton has done, and it's a great one. And then we'll do commercials, and then we will get Don Bentley on the phone.
Hello, fellow sci-fi readers. This is author Bria Burton reporting for Joy on Paper with your science fiction book buzz. Today's communique to galaxies near and far includes a 2022 dystopian, Hoster Girl, by Veronica Roth. The novel is available in print, ebook, and audiobook with stellar narration by Anna Caputo. Now, let's download the book buzz. What happens after one dystopia falls to another? Prisoner Sonia leads a meager existence in the all-but-forgotten Aperture, where former delegation members are confined but mostly left to fend for themselves. When the Triumvirate offer Sonia her freedom if she can crack the cold case of a missing girl, it's a once-in-a-lifetime chance that she can't pass up. Her ocular implant from the delegation becomes a useful tool for the agent assigned to Sonia, a former friend who betrayed her entire family to the triumvirate. Outside, the world Sonia once knew is both drastically different and frighteningly familiar. A shell of what it once was under the delegation, yet Sonia's journey exposes many of the faults not only of the current government, but of the former, leading her to question everything she has ever known and believed. Heavy with noir overtones, Poster Girl presents an all-too-plausible future through the eyes of a complex and evolving narrator. Timely and thought-provoking, this Orwellian atmospheric novel gazes unflinchingly at concepts like government overreach, censorship, and what it means to be truly free. Author Veronica Roth's other books include the best-selling Divergent series, the Carve the Mark duology, Chosen Ones, Arch Conspirator.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Have you ever faced disaster? The Red Cross is always there for you. The Red Cross responds to a call for help every 8 seconds. They have never turned anyone down. Now they need your financial support so that they can be ready to help you when the need arises. Donate online at redcross.org. Thank you.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at larsonpatentlaw.com.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more rewarding careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
With a Z, and I am back with my guest, Don Bentley. I am so happy to welcome him back. He is an author who makes me very, very nervous. I get very nervous when I read him with the excitement that he builds up in all of his books. And I am so happy that he's back on Joy on Paper because my listeners love him. And thank you, Don, for joining me to talk about Forgotten War.
Thank you so much for having me, Patsy.
Oh, wow. You know, last time we talked, I mentioned to you that my husband, of course, is also in the Israeli Air Force. And I didn't mention to you that he was also an aeronautical engineer and graduated from the Technion. And his specialty in design work when he worked in designing was helicopters. Mm-hmm.
Oh, I didn't know that. Then he is a brilliant man and probably a nervous one. Because whenever people ask me the difference between a helicopter and an airplane, I say that an airplane likes to fly and a helicopter wants to kill you. And that's the difference between the two.
Well, you know, it's fantastic. And it very, you know, with the joint working force that they used to have with the Americans and designers, very much it could have been that part that my husband designed was in one of your Apache helicopters, because you know that's a wonderful, you know, what you did, of course, as a helicopter pilot and then also FBI agent. You know, you are so multi-talented, and now with this series, you have set a new standard for thrillers. Matt Drake is... Matt Drake is just the top. He's absolutely fantastic.
I really appreciate you saying that. And Forgotten War, that comes out today, is the fourth book in the series. And I've been, I have a weird background, and my wife says it's because I can't figure out what I want to be when I grow up. And I think that is partially true, but what it has also let me do is rub shoulders with some really interesting people. And Matt Drake, while not me, somebody's asked me that before, are you Matt Drake? And I said, yeah, I'm absolutely not. But I've stood in the same room with men who could be. And Forgotten War is the fourth book in that series, and it's hopefully it's a really good story. But what it also is kind of my reaction as a veteran of Afghanistan to the fall and the crumble of Afghanistan during our 2021 withdrawal. And so that is the backdrop for Forgotten War, that you see Matt Drake needing to operate in Afghanistan as everything crumbles around him.
Well, one thing, I think it is true, though, helicopter pilots and I'm they have a wonderful minds. You know, all pilots are great, but helicopter pilots are, I think they're a very special breed.
Yeah, it was, I understand that Tom Cruise wanted to make Top Gun and have Apache pilots, but the Army wouldn't cooperate with him. So he had to stoop down to F-14s and then F-18s.
Yeah.
Because anybody can fly those. Not just anybody can fly Apache helicopters.
Exactly. And my husband did some, some dangerous work testing out his design. So, it's fun to think about. But, you know, this book, I think you've set, really, when I say that you've set a new standard in action thrillers, first of all, you're like nonstop action. But what I love about your writing, and I, you know, when you were here and we were talking about Hostile Intent, and I thought it was so terrific. And then when I get this book, I'll tell you, I always read from the beginning of the book, and I read the dedication. And
yep.
I think, you know, we should mention it because it is so important. And you wrote the dedication to the 11 Marines, one sailor, and one soldier who gave their lives on August 26th, 2021, at Kabul International Airport's Abbey Gate. And you write, "You are the very best of us. May we who remain prove worthy of your sacrifice." And that's such a beautiful dedication. And I read it, you know, so I read it. And then I get to the first chapter. I mean, I know I'm in for, you know, well, the prologue. I get to the prologue. And by this point, you know, I had tears in my eyes. And I was, my jaw was stiff. I was like, oh, I just, you know, a kind of rage. And then I read this prologue, and it is such a great prologue. I think, again, I think in Hostile Intent, there were points where I just held my breath while I was reading. And that happened in this prologue. I was furious. It's so beautifully written. I don't want to tell people what's in it.
Thank you.
But it is one of the greatest prologues in a thriller ever written. I was gripping the book. I was like almost shaking. And even now when I think about it, reading it, the emotion that I got from that, because I knew, you know, this was going to lead to an amazing story. And you certainly... You certainly made it.
Well, thank you for that. And I for this book, for Forgotten War, when I started out to write, I hadn't necessarily intended it to be so Afghanistan-centric. But I knew for the fourth book, so my protagonist is called Matt Drake, who's a former Army Ranger, and he's the current case officer for the Defense Intelligence Agency, which is just a fancy way of saying he's a spy. And his best friend is a guy who goes by his radio call sign of Frodo, who was a former Delta Force operative who was grievously injured in an IED explosion that happened right when my first book, Without Sanction, started. And so I've gotten tons of emails from readers over the years saying, we love Matt and Frodo, we love Matt and Frodo, but we'd love to see kind of their origin story or see how they get together or see them operating before Frodo was injured so terribly. And so I had this idea of doing, you know, an alternate timeline where you show Matt and Frodo originally together, just because I thought it'd be really fun and the readers like that. And so as I was sitting down to write this book is when the 2021 withdrawal from Afghanistan happened, and just watching it crumble, you know, I couldn't work for about 2 weeks. I was a veteran Afghanistan from 2005 to 2006. And, you know, like many Afghanistan veterans, I think I was ready for us to be done. My oldest son was born shortly after 9/11. He's now in the process of getting his commission as a Marine Corps officer. And as a father, you know, I find it abhorrent to think that our children would have to go back to Afghanistan 20 years later to do what exactly. But having said that, there is no way after 20 years of blood and tears and treasure that any of us wanted it to end the way it did. And so I kept getting these calls and texts from fellow veterans that the same question in one form or another they would ask was it worth it? Was the time we spent away from our family worth it? Was the brothers and sisters in arms we lost worth it? And I had to process that, and as a writer, I processed it in this book. And so I wanted to be very careful where I wanted to use actual events that happened in Afghanistan, but not take away from the sacrifices that men and women made. And when that horrible suicide bomber claimed the lives of those 13 folks, you know, they were, especially now, I'm 49 years old, and I'm looking at them, and they were just kids. They're just kids, but they're kids who raised their right hand, who said, I will stand on freedom's frontier on behalf of the 330 million Americans. I'll do that job for you so you don't have to, and they gave their lives doing it. And I thought, you know, by God, I have to dedicate this book to them. And hopefully Forgotten War is a great story. That's what it's meant to be. It's not meant to be nonfiction, but hopefully it honors the men and women who served and pays respects to the memories of those who didn't make it home.
Well, it does. And as you said, the flashback, going back in time 10 years to 2011, was really a perfect vehicle for bringing the story, you know, really giving us the whole background that we, as, you know, readers of your books are just, there's something special about your books. It's partly that you've got a heck of a sense of humor. You can find funny things in funny things. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
But also, I think the loving relationship that Matt Drake has with his wife, and in general, the loving relationship of the men for their families, that makes your books stand out.
I appreciate you saying that. You know, some of the feedback I've gotten on Forgotten War in particular, but then my series, much bigger, is for Forgotten War. What I kept getting from readers is there's an unexpected heart in this book. Like, there's an unexpected emotional core that I wouldn't expect of a thriller writer. And I take that and wear that badge proudly. But you know what? Like I said, the men, and in some cases women, I know who could be Matt Drake, who could be my protagonist, they're all huggers. Like, when you meet them, it was funny. I took my friend who worked with me to go visit a customer who was in special operations. And when we walked into their team room, I hugged him because I knew that's what he was going to do. And my engineer just kind of looked at him and backed away. And he went over there and said, we hug here. And he grabbed him and hugged him. And the reason why they do that is they don't use words like brotherhood lightly. That when you go into combat with people and that crucible forms a relationship that's deeper than a coworker, that you really do become brothers and sisters in arms. And those folks who I know who could be Matt Drake most of them have families, and their families are what keep them grounded across the, you know, there's a guy named Alan Mack, who I'm doing a signing with in Columbus, who was an Army 160th Night Stalker. He's one of the most dedicated helicopter pilots in aviation history. He actually flew the horse soldiers into Afghanistan, those initial Green Beret teams. He deployed 16 times to Afghanistan over a 10-year period. And the only way you do that is you have this family that is your rock. And it, and to me, it was more common to find men who loved their wives, who adored their children, than maybe the stereotypical thriller character. And so I intentionally put that in my books, both because it reflects my viewpoint. I'm married to my high school sweetheart that I met when I was 17 and she was 16. And it also reflects the lives of the men I know who could really be Matt Drake. And so I appreciate you picking up on that.
Well, you know, it's funny. You can write all, you know, both the heart-wrenching parts, and then,
yeah.
Boy, I love when you get into military hardware. I'm like, yay!
Yeah, I think you have to, well, two things. The humor you mentioned before is another thing I meant to hit on, is that, again, the people I know who could be Matt Drake in Forgotten War, most of them have a sense of gallows humor that is used because they see such terrible things and they're in such, you know, horrible conditions that they have to use that humor as a means of disarming what otherwise would be hard to cope for. And so I try and put that in my book. And then the military hardware stuff too, I that's a hard line to walk because I want it to be as much as realistic as possible. And a lot of readers in this genre love that and they geek out on it. But I also hope to, you know, one of the biggest compliments I get is when a reader says, hey, I just finished Forgotten War and this isn't a genre I would normally read, but I loved your book. And my wife doesn't read thrillers and she loves it. And she's always my first reader. And I figure if I hook her, then I can expand hopefully my audience beyond just the hardcore things. And so I definitely put the military hardware in there to make it accurate, but I also try not to overload you with details and make it sound like a technical manual either.
It's the right balance. You have just the right balance. And we can go from one, and we go from one emotion to another in this book.
Yeah.
Of course, in this book, I don't even want to, not sure I want to tell anybody what happens to Frodo, but Frodo has a problem. And then,
yeah.
Of course, Matt Drake is going to swing into action because that's what Matt Drake does. And you get to introduce some new characters
that
think are going to be, woo!
Thank you.
Some of them...
Yeah.
Tell us about the new characters that you introduced, because I don't know if they're going to continue, but I think you've got a winner in D.
So D Moss is actually a friend of mine, and I asked if I could use... She's not a pilot like that, but a lot of the character is built on her, and I asked her if I could use her and use what became her call sign as Bone, because D married a really good friend of mine who is one of five brothers, and he's the oldest, and so when he married Dee, his four brothers immediately christened her D-Bone and would call her that all the time. I thought, you know, that is a great call sign for a pilot, and so I stole that and used some of her, but her as a pilot, there's another Apache instructor pilot that didn't go to Afghanistan with us, but she got us ready to go. She had just come from a tour of duty in Iraq, and her name was Jen Wellington. And she was an incredible pilot. She's now actually a surgeon. She got out of the military and became a surgeon. And she saved people's lives by making us better pilots, by getting us ready to go to Afghanistan. And when she was in the initial invasion of Iraq, I mean, she was a gunship pilot getting it done. And so D Moss is very much a reflection of Jen and some of the other great pilots I flew with, as well as some of the traits of D herself that she let me deal and put in there. But what you were going with before, and I don't mind telling it because it sets the book up, but when the book starts, Frodo gets arrested by Army CID agents for a murder, that happened 10 years previously in Afghanistan. And so what Matt can't figure out is that Frodo refuses to talk about it other than to say he's guilty, and he won't say anything about what happened, even though Matt was with him during that operation. And so Matt swings into action to try and clear Frodo's name, but what happens is all of the men who were part of that Special Forces ODA team, all of the Green Berets who were on that operation with Matt and Frodo and who know what happened, all begin to die under mysterious circumstances. And so the only thing that Matt can do is to go back to Afghanistan and find the one man who knows what happened, who could clear Frodo's name, and that's their Afghan interpreter. But as this is happening, we are withdrawing from Afghanistan. Afghanistan's crumbling. And though Matt works for the Defense Intelligence Agency, his boss basically says, nobody's going into Afghanistan. The only people... it's only one way, only people coming out from Afghanistan. And so Matt has to put together this ragtag team of former veterans who are willing to go back into Afghanistan to rescue this Afghan interpreter. And that is also very much reflective of what happened during that 2021 withdrawal. You know, it's incredible where you had things like the Pineapple Express that men and women who were no longer in uniform stepped up to do what our government could or wouldn't or couldn't do. And I don't think any time since the evacuation in England that now I'm forgetting the name of in World War II, where the British civilians went and rescued
Dunkirk,
where the British civilians, right, got into boats and rescued their own army and kept them from being decimated by the Nazis. You know, I don't know that since then that civilians have said, I'm going back to Afghanistan because, by God, when I was there in uniform, I looked at my Afghan ally and said, if you stand shoulder to shoulder with me, America is going to protect you, and I'm going to honor my word even if my government can or won't right now. And I just had to capture that as part of Forgotten War as well.
Well, you certainly did, and you're right. You know, having lived in England, I lived in a little village where one of the boats that was there in the village, all of the villagers who had boats went to Dunkirk. And I used to love to go in the afternoons where we would have gin and tonic, and I would listen to the old guys talk about those years, that year and that time when they went to, to rescue their people from Dunkirk. And, I mean, this is... We're a special people. The English, the British, Americans, and other. We want to. We'll go and rescue one person if we know, if we believe we have a chance to do it.
Yeah, and that is something I think that's different about the American military, especially as it pertains to service members. You know, the in the Gospels it talks about how the good shepherd will leave the 99 in search of the one, and in the military that plays out a little differently in something that's called the Ranger Creed, which played very heavily and without sanction. And I'm going to badly paraphrase it here, but there's basically a paragraph of the Ranger Creed that says, never will I leave a fallen comrade to fall into the hands of the enemy. And, you know, you and I could get behind that and say, yeah, that makes sense. We would do that. But the men who, and in some cases women, who swear that oath are willing to put it all on the line to go get the one, even if the one has already been a fallen casualty. And I saw that firsthand in Afghanistan when a tragic event resulted in the deaths of a whole bunch of Navy SEALs. And we knew for the most part, that those folks had already perished, and we still went into harm's way. The guys on the ground went into harm's way to recover their remains, because that is the solemn oath that you swear to each other. And in fact, from the U.S. perspective, we still repatriate fallen soldiers from World War One or World War Two or the Korean War, because we honor our dead, and we honor that vow that the one is worth it, that you leave the 99 to find the one. And that very much was part of what drove the theme of Forgotten War.
Yeah, it is. And that's why I... it's very funny. The title is Forgotten War, and I have been working for years on a project called Forgotten F-105 Warriors. And, of course, those are from the Vietnam War, the 105 pilots who were lost over and over for ridiculous reasons. And so I think your book touches readers on so many levels. It's heart-wrenching. It's beautifully written. The action scenes, they're breathtaking. You're nuanced. I like that you've got a nuance in here to explain the story, explain what's happening. It's amazing. Now we're looking at Sudan. I don't know. It's sometimes overwhelming, but I think people should read your book, Forgotten War, because it is the beauty of this book is it's not only just that you're a great writer. I mean, a really terrific writer.
Thank you.
But you have this heart and soul and this American spirit of that I think people need to feel again, to have this renewed in themselves. And this book, I think, will help them.
I really appreciate you saying that. You know, it's astounding when you look at that for 20 years, men and women have raised their right hand and volunteered to go serve voluntarily in combat for their country. And the people who did that, the men and women who did that, are less than 0.25% of the American population.
I know.
And most of those people, I'm the anomaly. I only did one tour. Most of those people did multiple tours of duty in Iraq or Afghanistan. And I thought, you know, if maybe Forgotten War can give folks who don't know a service member, who don't have somebody, in their family who served, kind of a window into the incredible spirit of the men and women who did that. Because, you know, I came into the Army in 1997. There was no war going on. I wanted to go in the Army, and they paid for college, and it was a done deal. But every single man and woman from September 11th on that voluntarily did it, they knew they were going to combat. The 13 men and women who died tragically, they still volunteered knowing they were going into combat. And that's, you know, I don't want to take anything away from the World War II generation. They were incredible, and they saved the world. But, man, I think those men and women, those kids who did that, are our next greatest generation.
I agree. And I want to sort of give a special shout-out to your son, who's a Marine. Because for me, having lived in some dangerous parts of the world and traveled in some dangerous parts of the world, more than once, a Marine saved my life. And one time I was caught up in the right in the middle of a revolution, I was running, and a Marine, I could see in the distance a Marine, and he broke protocol. And he opened a gate and came out of that gate running and saved my life. That was a Marine. And there's nothing so gorgeous as seeing an American Marine when you are in the middle of trouble in a foreign country.
Yeah, everybody who's listening to this, you should Google General Kelly in speech. And I can't remember which one it is. So General Kelly, who was it served honorably as a Marine for a long time and was a general and then served in the Trump administration. He lost his own son in Afghanistan, and he gave a speech about two Marines in Iraq who stood shoulder to shoulder as a truck bomb was driving at them, as the Iraqi police ran for their lives, because they were the only thing standing between that truck bomb in a barracks full of their Marine brothers, and they refused to run.
Yep.
And it is emblematic of the Marine Corps and the American fighting spirit. And it is just incredible, an incredible speech. Everybody should read it.
You're right. And I've heard it, and I'm telling you, all of my listeners, Don Bentley's newest book, book four in the Matt Drake series, is called Forgotten War. And it is not just a thriller, it is more than that. It's reached new heights of writing. And of course, you also have a website that people can go to. They can follow you on social media, but it's available wherever books are sold. I'm sure that every bookstore that's still around is carrying your book right near the front door. They should have a whole pile of them, because you've done a terrific job with this book, Don.
Well, thank you so much, Patsy. I really appreciate the kind words.
And a special give your, you know, I'm a hugger. I give your son a hug for me, because I'm here because a Marine saved my life. And I am so, so grateful. Semper Fi to him and to all the Marines, and to you. Just thank you so much for writing this absolutely fantastic book.
No, thank you.
Okay. Again, thanks for being on Joy on Paper today. Take care, okay?
Bye.
Bye-bye. Wow. Wow. I have tears in my eyes just thinking about it. You know, this book, I think, is probably one of the best thrillers I've ever read. Definitely. You know, you get to a book, and it's so full of love and love for his fellow military people and fellow Americans and the good people in the world. Don Bentley is somebody really special. He's done an amazing job, and this is book four, and I hope you'll get it. It's really wonderful. Oh, wow. It's been a bit of an emotional day for me when I think about it, because lots of things have happened, and you worry whenever you've lived in a foreign country where there's been a revolution or insurgency or a war, you worry about the other people in other countries where something similar has happened. And of course, now it's the Sudan, and it's hard to believe that so many people are there. Anyway, I just want to remind everyone that one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper, or to hear them spoken in an audible book, or if you're very, very lucky, to hear those magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into a major motion picture, streaming video, or perhaps series on the Hallmark Channel. You never know. You won't know unless you start writing. So meanwhile, I want to tell you, everybody, that Carol J. Perry has some big sales starting tomorrow. So go check on Barnes & Noble. This is Barnes & Noble special sale. You can get her Audible, two of her Audible books on sale there for 25% off. This is a big sale at Barnes & Noble. And of course, she is on in the bookstore, and Barnes & Noble loves to carry her books, so I'm so happy for her. I'm very happy that she's part of this big sale. Meanwhile, say something nice to somebody, and I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. Thank you, Ed. We got through the day. You never know. Aw, things happen. Anyway, bye-bye.